I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of the Cult Pop Show podcast was brought to you by our Patreon.
If you want to tell us which films we should watch, get up to 2 extra exclusive podcasts a month, give us something to talk about in the post-credit scenes at the end of each episode, or even contribute to the discussion in the episode itself, then please consider joining the cult and donating at www.patreon.com/cultpopshow.
Hello and welcome along to our 95th annual Academy Awards debrief.
Okay, yeah, but it's not, this isn't the 95th year in a row we've done this. This is us talking about the 95th year in a row. I thought that's where you were going. I was like, welcome to our 95th episode on the Oscars.
Yeah, that was the joke. I intentionally left that participle dangling. And
one leaves a participle dangling like Richard Participle Dangler Martin. That's what they called you down at the office.
Yeah, so the Oscars have just wrapped up, and like I'm sure a few other movie podcasts out there are doing, we are going to be giving you our thoughts on the Academy's thoughts.
And yes, there is an elephant. Wasn't there a film about elephants?
Yeah, there's the Elephant Whale Whisperer.
There's an elephant whisperer in the room, or a whale in the room, that our usual sometimes host, Aaron, who has joined us for most of our, if not all of our episodes.
The last 94.
He get this too busy because of a play he's in.
Our actor/friend is too busy acting slash...
To be our friend.
to be our friend, nice. Yeah, so this is a very... loose sort of format, just chat about the 3-hour 35-minute ceremony we've just watched.
Can we beat
AJ's
it?
Chugging a Coke No Sugar, and I've got most of a bottle of water.
Bottle of pump. Mm-hmm. Bump. The best thing about watching the Oscars in New Zealand on the TVNZ app, which streams broadcast television, something I do not watch a lot of anymore these days, is the 3 ads they'll repeat every single ad break. And so, like, I'm all caught up on, like, Eva Longoria's makeup.
L'Oreal.
I'm all caught up on the thing that
Street.
The thing that Charlie Swan from Twilight
Fire Country.
And that reality dating show where it's like that guy was like, I think you're very attractive. And she's like, thanks. And he's like, I think you're very attractive. And it's like, I saw that a dozen times.
What else did we see? Yeah, something just a big gust of wind came in and blew some paper up.
Well, that, speaking of Richard, unfortunately, that might be the most dramatic thing we'll discuss on this episode, because what a behaved, sensible ceremony it was this year. Ethically, I'm like, good, but as a content creator, I'm like, God, we talked about the slap for like 45 minutes last year. Like, I don't know what we're going to talk about.
Well, I mean, bloody Jimmy Kimmel wouldn't shut up about the slap either.
He had some swings, and some of them I laughed at. Some of them I thought was great. I thought it was funny when he talked about how they put all the awards they took out back in, and that this was what the film community wanted, but at odds with what the TV community wanted. I thought that was an astute observation.
Yeah, his joke about, hey, like, hey guys, just so you know, if you get up here and commit a violent act, you will be given Best Actor.
It's interesting, isn't it? Like, I wonder who gets mad, right? Because the Academy
sitting at home, his hand, you know, just a fucking flaccid hand. ready and nothing to do it with. To do with it.
I wonder, like, because it's one of these things where it's like Jimmy Kimmel made, and he's not the worst, you know, Ricky Gervais probably has the crown for this, but Jimmy Kimmel made a couple of jokes that were like legitimate digs at the Academy's character, you know, like talking about how they don't nominate female directors, like stuff that feels like, I guess, things the Academy wouldn't want to be made fun of for. But it also, they must just be like, say whatever you want as long as people tune in. Like, be as brutal as you want to us. But it creates this weird thing, and every single person watching in the world can feel it. It creates this weird thing where it's like, well, if you're aware of these problems and yet you still allow them to happen, it kind of, it's like, it stops being funny when it's like, yeah, but he's right.
Yeah, but I guess the alternative being the Academy saying, hey, please don't make jokes about this, which I think is a lot, and maybe not someone like Jimmy Kimmel, who's in ABC's pocket very much already, but you would get hosts that go, like, they come out afterwards and be like, the Academy said I wasn't allowed to make Will Smith jokes. And that's such a massive blow to them that it's like, it's everything like this. It's like, it is so much better to pretend you're in on the joke.
Yeah, even though they're probably, can you, the icy silence is backstage whenever a joke like that was made. And they're just like, all right, camera two. To pretend it's all good.
Yeah, but the, so people shit on Jimmy Kimmel, like talking about, let's start at the start of the ceremony. I didn't actually really watch any of the red carpet. I caught the end of it. I thought Hugh Grant's interview was very funny, where he just was not giving that woman anything. And but yeah, the interesting change that it was a champagne colored carpet this year, which looks very similar to beige. But apparently the reason for the change was that the show starts in the afternoon and finishes in the evening. So the red carpet takes place during the day, and that a red carpet is too formal. It's too nighttimey. And so this was the sort of thing to transition. So the show transitions you into nighttime rather than just having this very formal thing happen in the middle of the day. And yeah, I mean, I like, it's one of those things. It's like, I don't really care what color the carpet is. It's an interesting choice, but apparently this is something that they'd, like, the heads of the Academy have thought was an issue for years. But I mean, it's been a red carpet since 1961, which was the first time they ever televised the Academy Awards. But the general public didn't know, I guess, that it was red until 1966, which was the first time they broadcast it in color.
Right. Well, because the Independent Spirit Awards have a blue carpet. And so I wonder if there's some kind, you know how there's like grey, white, brown and blue wizards in Lord of the Rings? I wonder if there are mystical qualities to different colours of carpet. And I wonder what attributes we can glean from them, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I wonder what magical powers they imbue those crossing it with.
Well, I mean, for some of them, the champagne carpet ended up being quite fortuitous, didn't it?
Because they got drunk?
Well, no, because they won Oscars.
Won. Well, that's a gimme for that's a gimme for just having the Oscars, I guess. It's always going to apply.
Yeah,
to
but so opening up with a night,
I'm going to start telling people that anytime I'm wearing beige, that it's champagne coloured. Like, no, this is my champagne sweater.
So, yeah. The beginning of the night opens with a Jimmy Kimmel monologue, and people watch this and they go, oh, such a hack, this piece of shit. And it's like, I think that Jimmy Kimmel, for better or worse, is like the platonic ideal of an Oscars host.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it's like, I mean, he's willing to make a few jabs, but he's still going to keep ABC very happy. And yeah, I mean, it, like, because Bob Hope hosted the Oscars like a record number of times, and like, Bob Hope sucks. Bob Hope, it was the same kind of thing that it's like, I think he's looked back on as being, you know, one of the greats of comedy. But you talk to, like, I was listening to a podcast with like Conan O'Brien and some other people from comedy, and they were just like, Bob Hope's the fucking worst.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about Bob Hope. This is the first piece of information I've learned.
He played
Bob
for
Hope.
The troops a lot as well, which is
that a team?
No, he would like go perform for the military
when they were
deployed overseas, which is what his appearance in The Simpsons. Yeah,
I bet all wasn't quiet on the Western Front that night when he went to perform for the troops.
Very nice.
Thank you very much.
Yes,
I should be hosting the Oscars with zingers like this.
Yeah. So, well, yeah. Well, how should we form it? I mean, I guess we should talk about the fact that we haven't said what won yet, but.
Well, do we go through the awards? Do we care enough to talk about best short documentary that neither of us have seen? Or is it more just we go through the big ones and discuss if we thought it went to the right person or anything like that?
Yeah, do you have any other comments on the telecast, I guess, before we get into the awards?
No, there was just nothing really about it that was that controversial this year, which sounds like I'm a glutton for it, and I'm really not. What maybe is worth talking about is our previous Oscars episode this year, which was a pre-Scooby-Doo episode. Mm. The last pre-Scooby-Doo episode was us doing Oscars maths to try and figure out who was most likely to win based on trends from previous years, and we placed Banshees of Inisherin in front of Everything Everywhere All at Once, and up until about a week ago, Richard, I was quite confident that we'd made the right prediction. I was like, I think Banshees is the, like, Everything Everywhere All at Once has the more passionate fans, but Banshees is the more sensible film.
Yeah.
I was very sure it was going to win.
Up until the envelope was opened and Harrison Ford said Everything Everywhere All at Once, there was still a bit in my mind that thought it could go to Banshees. And I think there was a few of the like brutally honest anonymous Oscar ballots released.
Yes, people when they're not going to get in trouble talking about how racist they are.
Yeah, and so it is interesting, and every single one of those I read had Banshees in the top four, and there was a couple that had Everything Everywhere last, and I was like, maybe with the ranked choice voting, which once again, if you don't know, is that you rank from 1 to 10 how you feel about the Best Picture nominees. They only look at what you ranked number one, and then if you have to have 50% of the number one votes to win. If you don't, what they do then is they take the film that received the least number of number one votes, they eliminate that from everyone's ballot. So everyone who put that first now has their second place one looked at. Then they add all those to the ballot, and then they just keep doing that until one film passes that threshold. And Banshees of Inisherin seems like it would be the favorite
considering that voting thing.
But then I was like, maybe there is actually going to be enough people that put Everything Everywhere first to even just get it across. I mean, we'll never know. They don't announce any of this. But that it's like, yeah, maybe.
Well, we kind of do know. Isn't that literally what happened since it won? It won Best Picture, by the way.
Oh, no, I mean, that it's like, I'm not saying it won. Yeah, but we'll never know how many rounds of voting and eliminating they had to go through. Right. But maybe there actually was just enough in the Academy that even just on that first round, it got through. Like, it didn't have to rely on being people's two or three or four pick.
Yeah.
Because it is weird that, like, I can't, if Everything Everywhere isn't your first one, I can't imagine it being your second or third. It's like, if you don't like it enough to put it number one, it's probably down the bottom for you.
That being said, I think I would probably maybe, let me just check my ranking, but I think currently, if you were to look at my, my 2022 ranking, I think it might actually be my third. Just to be exactly the analogy you said was unlikely.
If you were doing an Oscar ballot, would you vote like that?
Maybe. So I've got Banshees and All Quiet on the Western Front in front of Everything Everywhere All at Once. But it's one of these things where it's like politically I'd rather Everything Everywhere All at Once wins because I want to shake up what people expect of the slate of
and that was films. Sort of what I thought would be your answer is that if they actually said to you, AJ, what should win, not what do you think deserves to win, not what is your favorite thing, but what should win the 95th Academy Award for Best Picture,
yeah,
I feel like the answer is Everything Everywhere All at Once, because it's this win. Not only is it a great film, but it's this win for creativity. It's a win for representation, for diversity.
Yeah, exactly.
And that it's like similar with when Shape of Water won. That wasn't my favorite film of that year by any stretch of the imagination. Mm. But I mean, I probably still would have preferred Three Billboards to win, but I was happy for Shape of Water to win because it's like, yes, let's have a quote unquote fantasy or sci-fi movie win Best Picture, because it says it's just something new and fun for the Academy.
And maybe the Shape of Water winning is responsible for something like Everything Everywhere All at Once being part of the conversation initially. Yeah.
Like, because,
you know, this is what we're talking about when we say, like, we want weird films to win, because the term Oscar bait and the idea of an Oscar-y film is born out of the same stuff being produced. Maybe one of the most guilty of being Oscar baity films this year to, it wasn't Best Picture nominated, but To Leslie, this Andrea Riseborough film I watched because everyone, Edward Norton was like, this is the best performance I've ever seen. And so I watched the film, and what a by the numbers, perfectly fine movie with a pretty good performance at the center of it.
Well, from the best actress clip they played, which is all I've seen of the film, it's like
it looks like a Tropic Thunder movie.
Well, it's just like that very like, oh, she is yelling and she is crying.
It's a woman who's hit rock bottom. She's an alcoholic and she just wants to get back on her feet. And I just feel like I've seen that enough by this point, especially in terms of like acting nominations.
Yeah, but then you look at Michelle Yeoh, who won for Everything Everywhere All at Once. It's like, what an incredible role when a Asian woman, you know, or Asian people like been shut out by Hollywood for years. Middle-aged woman, historically received pretty bad roles in Hollywood. Yep. But it's like, you get that she gets this role where she gets to win an Oscar for doing fucking martial arts and just like having so much fun. Same with Jamie Lee Curtis, who also won an Oscar this for Best Supporting Actress, which is a role that, you know, wasn't particularly demanding. It didn't seem. But she... That felt more like a legacy win, but I'm still very happy for Jamie.
I like anyone who listened to our roundup of the 2022 films at end of last year will know that I have quite a complicated relationship with Everything Everywhere All at Once. I don't really know how I feel about it. It feels like a lot of stuff I like, but it completely passes through me whenever I watch it. But that being said, I was editing. I like seeing it sweep all the awards and being like, oh, that's interesting. And I was editing a montage for Letterboxd for like the Best Picture nominees. And I found this clip from the movie where Michelle Yeoh and Ke-Huy Quan are like sort of laughing together, covered in blood and in the chaos of it all. And it was just this isolated clip made me feel so much. And I was just like, God, they really are great in it. And then today, when they played the clip of Jamie Lee Curtis, like her Oscar clip, was her just pointing at receipts and being like, these tell me a story, and the story they tell me is not a very good one. And it's like, what a great delivery. Like, for some reason, seeing bits of Everything Everywhere All at Once in isolation are starting to have more of an effect on me than watching the film in its entirety. And because I was surprised that Jamie Lee Curtis was nominated. I thought she was like kind of like incidental to the film. And I thought Stephanie Hsu was probably the more obvious best supporting actress nom for it. But like, I heard someone, it was probably Jamie Lee Curtis talking about when she got called up for it. And she said, they want you to play Michelle Yeoh's nemesis, and kind of thinking about it in these big Greek kind of, you know, playing field terms, I kind of see a lot more into the importance of the character. And maybe I need to give Everything Everywhere All at Once a third chance, because after tonight I'm certainly open to it.
I've been very keen to watch it a second time, because I loved it when I first saw it, but it was almost exactly a year ago that I first saw the film premiered a year ago yesterday, I believe.
South by Southwest, yeah.
And, yeah, but what a fucking crazy year it's been for the Daniels. That, like, you know, this is the kind of movie you see early on in the year and you think, oh, that'll be the best film all year, but you just expect it to get no Oscar love. Mm. Like, I mean, something like
and
this.
And instead, that was After Sun.
But the it's, well, I mean, I would say After Sun's a more traditionally Oscar-y film.
That's true. But it's more traditional than everything everywhere once, but I still wouldn't call it entirely traditional.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, like Nope was that film for this year where you watch it and you go, one of the best films of the year, but not a single nomination in any category, which is crazy.
Ridiculous.
Especially fucking when it's not like they just don't like Jordan Peele. Like,
well, no, Richard, to once again bring up the conversation about how backwards and racist the Oscars are, that we do this every year.
Yeah.
Look at the three films. Ignore, I know you have feelings about Us, the movie, not you and me, but ignore that for a second and look at, like, out of Jordan Peele's three films, what is it about Get Out that's different from Us? And
it's got white people in it.
Well, no, yeah, but it deals directly with race,
yeah.
Whereas Us and Nope, we're all good. Nope certainly doesn't. Like, Nope's not. Well, I guess it is, but not in the same like
white people don't understand that it's about race.
Like, it's not as confronting. It's not as, like, accusatory. And the Oscars want to nominate films like that so they look, I guess, woke. But it's like, you should be nominating. Like, Nope should have got Nope should have been nominated for Best Picture. Like, I think it's insane that it wasn't given any.
Yeah, I mean, Best Sound, and it's like, there's a bunch of stuff. But it's like, once you have the club of the nominees, it's like, well, of Best Picture nominees, it's like, well, it makes sense that they're going to fill out the technical awards because you're saying they are the best. Yeah. But yeah, it is funny that the only three films won multiple awards tonight, and that was Everything Everywhere All at Once won 7 awards, All Quiet on the Western Front won 4 awards, and The Whale won 2 awards.
It's so interesting.
Yeah.
Like, as not, like, when Everything Everywhere All at Once, when it won Best Picture, but even when Michelle Yeoh got Best Actress, as soon as they won, like, something clicked in my brain that was like, well, of course. Like, leave stats and predictions aside, but, like, looking at the journey of Everything Everywhere All at Once, which I wish had a shorter title, so it didn't take as long to say.
I always just say Everything Everywhere.
Right, well, there you go.
Let's say that for now.
Adopt that as okay, all right. So with Everything Everywhere All at Once, with that winning...
No!
when that won Best Picture. All right, well, I just delete the episode. Like, as soon as that won, I was like, it was always going to be this. Like, look at the story that's been told with it going through, you know, and just sweeping the conversation of film in the past year. Like, of course it was going to win. It seems obvious in hindsight, but at the same time, if you told me that Tar, that Banshees of Inisherin, that Fablemans. Triangle of Sadness, the Fablemans aren't going to pick up dick, then that's crazy.
What,
crazy.
The crazy thing, yeah, that... So there was, like, the five films that we were like, well, it's going to be one of these because they were in the running for Best Director, original screenplay, and editing. And it's like, well, it has to be one of these five films winning. The four other nominees didn't win a single award.
Yeah, yeah. And these ones that won multiple awards, plus Woman Talking, are the three films that everyone had kind of written off. You didn't even see All Quiet on the Western.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was. It had been written off. But yeah, because it did really well at the BAFTAs and shit. But yeah, I'm so annoyed I didn't watch that. I wish I'd seen it when it was in the cinema here, because the idea of sitting down and watching like a 2-hour, 40-minute, whatever, war film on Netflix in a foreign language, I'm like, when am I going to have the time and motivation to do that? If not for an Oscars cheat sheet episode, which we didn't do.
I saw All Quiet on the Western Front, and I thought it was great. And before the Oscars, my flatmate was like, are you excited? What are you hoping wins? And I said, I'm not really that exciting. I'm kind of hoping
On
the Western Front. That's true as well. I'm kind of hoping that All Quiet wins cinematography and score, but that's about as much as I've invested in. And then it won both, and I was so happy. I thought it was so great that it won those. I think they're such, like, the score, which is very familiar to me because it sounds like the score for You're the Killer, the film I made last year, which was in turn inspired by the score for Annihilation, which a lot of people are drawing comparisons to. That played so many times, and it's so funny that it won Best Score because... Burr, burr, burr. And because, like, it's just three notes and that one Best Score, you know? Like, it is essentially three notes played over and over again. And that...
Music is just the same 12 notes played over and over again.
I guess
again.
So. But it's funny that it beat, like, 90-something-year-old John Williams's, like, probably final score he'll ever do.
Well, final collaboration with Spielberg, at least, yeah.
So yeah, no, I was happy with All Quiet winning as much as it did, and I think that was certainly the in a lot of ways that felt like the underdog of the ceremony, because I feel like that's maybe the one that a lot of people skipped, such as yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that it was a not necessarily an underdog going into the ceremony, but an underdog going into awards season. I think it picked up a lot of steam during awards season with, like, its BAFTA wins, and it's I think it got some love at the Golden Globes as well. And so there was talk of, oh, is this going to be an upset?
I was fearful for Everything Everywhere winning for the past week and a half was the middle of the ceremony today.
Yeah, leading it is up, funny like, that, yeah.
It would be like, oh, what's going to win? It'd be like, Everything Everywhere All at Once is going to win. Mm. Like, if it's not that, it'll be Banshees of Inisherin. And then going into it being like, oh my God, is All Quiet on the Western Front going to win?
It is really funny because it's like, yeah, you have this thing where, you know, you have like above the line and below the line awards. And the way they split up the ceremony, because like from the start, they did the two supporting performances and both went to Everything Everywhere All at Once, and it was like, fuck yeah, okay. And then there was like a massive gap of just like below the line awards and, you know, the technical awards, which All Quiet pretty much swept. And yeah.
The sound, which went to Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah. But it's, yeah, it performed very well. And it's like, but then once it started doing the big awards again, they all went to Everything Everywhere. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, no, it is safe.
Yeah, we're safe. We're safe. Yeah. So should we go through let's just go through all the awards and discuss if we thought it deserved its win or not.
All right. I'm going to go bottom to top on Wikipedia, but this isn't the order they were in the ceremony.
Sure.
So just for anyone listening. So best visual effects went to Avatar Way of Water. Mm-hmm. Do you have any issues with that? Do you have any qualms?
No, I think it would be just fuck everything if Avatar, a film that took 15 years to make, if that didn't win for visual effects, when it's out of all the awards, this is probably the one that has the most clout in terms of, like, this is legitimately going to push forward the industry.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, more so than Best Picture going to a weird film, Avatar is going to open the door for a lot more things to push the envelope when it comes to interesting visual effects and, like, visual effects holding up an entire 3-hour film.
Yeah, and also that, yeah, apparently there's only two shots in the entire film that don't have any visual effects, or that aren't, like, almost entirely visual effects.
Wow.
So film editing went to Everything Everywhere All at Once. This was one that came later on in the picture, but yeah, it was... This was up against Banshees, Elvis, Tar, and Top Gun, and
yeah, I wanted Elvis to win. By the time Everything Everywhere was sweeping, I was like, "Fuck it, give them everything." But pre ceremony, I wanted Elvis to win editing. I think.
Yeah, well, you haven't really had a chance to talk about Elvis on the podcast yet.
Really liked it. I thought it was great. I thought, I also very proudly and defiantly thought Tom Hanks was really good in it. and I actually think he should have been, well, maybe not in terms of the five spots for Best Supporting Actor, but I think he gave a performance that was just as worthy of a nomination of Best Supporting Actor as anyone else. I don't know. I just watched that movie, and whenever Tom Hanks was on screen, I was like, I get it. I see it. I see you.
I see
what you're doing. And I think he just played a really compelling character, and it was a really compelling story, and just fantastic editing in a way that is, like, never been seen before, like an entire movie that just feels like it's
a montage.
A montage, and that spares it from pacing issues, and that spares it from being boring or like, you know, losing your attention if everything, and it gives it room to be as weird as it wants to be at times, and it is a weird film.
Yeah, you know? It was like over 2 hours into the film before I was like, checked my watch to see how long it had left, because it is just so relentless with its pace for that long that it's like you don't have a moment to look down at your watch. But yeah, I thought Elvis was a masterpiece, and it was one of the ones that's like, you know, received a bit of backlash that people think it's, you know, one of those things that it comes out, everyone goes, oh, it's amazing, and then there's a bit of discourse that goes, oh, it's not that amazing, and I'm like, nah, I think Elvis was fucking incredible.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, this is, I think, yeah, what was it, that every, since 1981, every Best Editing winner has been nominated for Best Picture, and about two-thirds of the winners have gone on to win Best Picture, so it's one of the best indicators of what will win. And I remember I sort of saying that if Banshees were to win that on the night, it's all over for everything, everywhere.
Yeah. No, that's a good point.
Ruth.
So it didn't. So it was actually quite important that, that Everything Everywhere won.
Yeah. So Best Costume Design went to Black Panther Wakanda Forever, Ruth E. Carter's costume design.
This is like, it was such a non-controversial Oscars that this is maybe the biggest upset for me, because people hated the costuming in this. When they say costuming, are they talking about like the weird mech suits that everyone puts on at the end?
Well, I would say they're probably more CGI. Visual effects,
because people hated them.
Right, yeah.
But I guess the other stuff is all right. But yeah, I
was up against Babylon, Elvis, Everything Everywhere, and Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris. I personally would have given it to Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris. Not only is the costume design and that incredible, but it serves the story so well. But
I'll take your word for it, but I'll do more, Richard. I will officially place my support in the camp of it should have gone to Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris without seeing it.
So, but one thing, so when I was in Seattle at the MoPOP, the Museum of Pop Culture, they had a Ruth E. Carter like display, and so they had a bunch of costumes from films she's done the costume design for, and yeah, so she did like Malcolm X, Amistad, she did Coming to America. I remember they had costumes from that. But yeah, she won an Oscar for the first Black Panther, and so won again for this, making her the first woman of color in history to have two Academy Awards in any category.
And it's like you're stung with both the how good and how bad is that, right? Like that this is the first time, but well done. But also, how often does a film and its sequel win?
Yeah.
The same award, you know, there's a stat in there somewhere.
Yeah that like, yeah, I mean, just like she just copied her own homework.
yeah well, in a way it's an extension of the first film's Oscar for costume.
Yeah. So makeup and hairstyling nominees were Elvis, Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, The Batman, All Quiet on the Western Front, and the winner was The Whale, which they said in the, like, in the, when they announced the award and they say a few statistics about it, they said something that was like the first fully digital makeup or something like that. And I think that his like fat suit was real, because he's talked a lot about having that on, but maybe there was nothing on his face and that was all done digitally, but he was wearing
his face look the fakest.
Yeah.
Academy Award winning for makeup film. His face did look the fakest. I would have given this to the Batman. I think Colin Farrell in the Batman, the makeup on him.
I was going to say, oh yeah, Robert Pattinson had that black makeup around his eyes. That must have taken hours.
It was awesome. It was fucking cool.
Yeah, Robert Pattinson spent like 8 hours in the makeup chair every morning.
I guess the most.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's an interesting thing about the whale winning, both for this and Best Actor, is like, it's clear, I guess, that the controversies around this film just didn't matter to most Academy voters.
Well, I guess there's not many fat people in the Academy.
You don't reckon?
Well, if they've got to be on screen all the time.
Not all of them have to be on screen.
Most of them don't, in fact.
Yeah. Probably a lot of fat cats in the
Academy. Which explains Black Panther's award as well, because
of course
the panther is a cat.
Weird it didn't win makeup and hairstyling and
yeah.
Cats famously hate whales.
Yeah, the fat cats got together and they're like, okay, which one do we want to give to the fat and which one do we want to give to the cat?
Right. And meanwhile, Catwoman in the Batman is like, I'm right here.
Yeah. So... yeah, that was like, yeah, an interesting one. I mean, that feels like it's, oh yeah, of course this one, you know, like, oh, it was really bucketing down out there.
Really?
Good thing I just took my washing in.
It was bucketing out down earlier today, so I know the feeling. I guess like in a way, a lot of the stuff that won fits the narrative of the awards season and the like position in which these films have dominated conversations throughout the year. Like, In a way, the whale is destined to win hair and makeup because that's what people were talking about to do with it.
Best cinematography nominees were Tar, Empire of Light, Elvis, Bardo, False Chronicle of a Handful of Truths. But the winner was All Quiet on the Western Front. Interesting, yeah, there's like two films here, Empire of Light and Bardo, that the conversation around them are. Film's not very good. Looks nice, though. I mean, it's like Roger Deakins shot Empire of Light, but the film's not very good. Yeah. I haven't seen Bardo, but apparently it looks beautiful.
I can understand, because it feels like it's been a weak year for cinematography, because the cinematography and all the Best Picture nominees is like largely unnotable outside of what Tar and All Quiet, which won. I think out of those nominees, I think All Quiet deserved it. I think it's a beautiful looking film. I'm really glad it won that.
Yeah,
I think the Batman should have been nominated.
Yeah, Roger Deakins came out and said that he thought the Batman was the best cinematography of the year, and that it was just, what's the word? You know, elitism.
Yeah, I think so. But also, it also feels like cinematography usually feels a lot more stacked than it did this year, anyway. So,
yeah.
What's that say about what we're willing to shoot, I guess? Just give After Sun a nomination then, I reckon. That's going to be my response for any time it feels like a category was lacking in nominations.
Best Production Design. The Fabelmans, Elvis, Babylon, Avatar, The Way of Water. But the winner was All Quiet on the Western Front. Oh, I've heard that name a few times, haven't we?
Did that win production design? That's interesting. I probably wouldn't have given it production design.
What would you have given it to out of those?
I loved hearing that score every time it won an award. What were the other nominees, sorry?
Avatar, Babylon, Elvis, The Fabelmans. I would have given this to Elvis, probably.
Yeah, I would have given it to Elvis. Yeah.
Yeah. Best Sound.
When is Baz Luhrmann gonna get an Oscar for the thing he's famously good at? The thing that he has more of a hit rate than the films he makes themselves. Yeah, you know?
I believe he wasn't obviously nominated for production design, but Catherine Martin who was nominated for it, is his wife.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah. They're obviously a force to be reckoned with, though apparently you don't have to reckon that hard to steal it out from their hands.
I was very happy to see Babylon lose out its awards, though, because that movie was shit. And Jimmy Kimmel got boos for a joke where he said, you know, the difference. One of the differences between movie and TV is that TV shows can't lose $100 million, and he's like, is Babylon here? You guys know what I'm talking about.
I saw Babylon two or three days ago. I thought it was great, Richard, and I messaged you the next day and I was like, what didn't you like about it? And you were like, I don't want to talk about it. It's interesting that you're throwing punches on the podcast, Richard, out of the two of us about Babylon. I thought it was cool, but not enough to like want to defend it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess...
Similar feelings to Elvis, I think. Though I preferred Elvis.
Interesting, yeah. I mean, I didn't like Babylon, but I guess, like, it's been so long since I've seen it that it's like I don't hate it vehemently enough to undefend it. But
I don't love it vehemently enough to defend it.
Yeah. But I mean, and also just that, like, when it came out and when reviews started to come out, I was like looking at every review to be like, am I the only person that didn't like this? And then it came out, no, more people didn't like it. And then it became, and just like every fucking year, I get so sick of there becomes a film that's like, you are either with us or
Babylon
against us.
Oh, Babylon the film for you this year where all your workmates would come up to you?
And No.
No, not that. Because you say that every year.
Yeah.
It's been Joker, it's been Bohemian Rhapsody, Greatest Showman.
Yeah.
So Babylon was not that. Okay.
This year the one that was like that we're talking about is that everyone from my work comes up and asks me about,
and because they know you're the film guy.
Yeah, I would say this year, even though I did like the film, it was probably The Menu.
Yeah, right. Not as high caliber as previous years.
Mm, but the movie that everyone goes, oh, I watched a really good film that's like not a blockbuster, and I'd love to talk to you about it.
Did not a lot of people come and talk to you about Everything Everywhere All at Once?
That was interesting.
The conversation.
Everything Everywhere All at Once, I talked to so many people about. And like, so that one became Richard, I finally checked out that movie you recommended.
Do you know what it was? It would have been Elvis. Surely Elvis was the movie this year.
Nah, not many people saw Elvis.
That feels like
it does.
This year's analog to Bohemian Rhapsody and Greatest Showman.
I do think that post COVID, general audiences don't go to the movies much anymore, and that, like, this whole thing of,
and when they do, they talk all the way through it.
Yeah.
So 65 last night, sat across from an old couple who were whispering the entire time.
I mean, maybe actually the film was Top Gun, even. That, like, because there's been all this talk about Top Gun is the film that got people back into cinemas. And for, like, you and I, it was like, well, I never left cinemas. And unless I was government ordered not to go to a cinema, I was quite happy to go to one. And now, yeah, you get a lot of people that, especially because of COVID, that theatrical windows have gotten much shorter and films are going to streaming a lot earlier, that people will just wait for it to go on streaming and there's less of a rush to see it. And then so it changes the water cooler talk of a film, sort of thing. The Menu is a classic example that, like, when I came back from Christmas holidays, everyone was asking me about that film and Glass Onion, but it was like, no one saw it in the cinema, you know? That film went to Disney Plus quite quickly and everyone saw it. But yeah, but it's just interesting that, yeah, interacting with the normies at my work, that it is like, yeah, Top Gun actually did, I think, bring a lot of people back into the cinema.
And Elvis is like, looks like it'll be the normie film, but it's in the clothes of the weirdest film you'll see this year.
Yeah. And also, like, a lot of people, most people that I talk to about Elvis are, oh, I need to see that. I never got around to it.
And you'd be like, you won't like it.
Yeah, yeah. So what one, there was just, do we just do best sound? Okay.
Best sound was
Top Gun Maverick, which beat out All Quiet, Avatar, The Batman, and Elvis.
Should have gone to Nope. Sorry, wasn't nominated. But
well, so best original song. I think there'll be a lot of happy people tonight. This went to Natu Natu from RRR.
Oh, right, yeah. Another cultural conversation I haven't opened the door to myself.
I mean, I want to see RRR really bad, but it's such a long, such a long film. It's such a lot of effort to go into to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, beat out Diane Warren, who is nominated fucking every year. She's been nominated for 14 competitive Academy Awards without a win. She received an honorary one just at the ceremony, and they did it in November.
I would rather never win an Oscar than win an honorary Oscar.
Yeah, it is. I mean, some of the honorary Oscars are quite good, where it's like, you don't really contribute to, like, Oscar-y films, but here's a recognition of your work. And I mean,
Kevin Feige's biting his nails then.
Yeah. I mean, he's kind of a good example. I mean, I would say it's only a matter of time before Andy Serkis gets one, and I think it's insane that he hasn't already, that just for his contribution to this art form that has brought us many great characters of mocap, that it's like... I mean, the whole mocap discussion is an argument that pops up every few years, but yeah, I'm surprised there hasn't been an honorary Oscar for Andy Serkis. I mean, I guess his is like a little bit more... He would probably still feel insulted by that, but something, yeah, like Diane Warren, where it's like, ah, you keep at it, here you go, like... But yeah, the way that the... I was reading something, I can't remember the details of it though, but it was like essentially about how the original song is like you're very much like a club, and it's like that's why Diane Warren is always nominated. But yeah, she had a song from Tell It Like a Woman called Applause, Hold My Hand from Top Gun Maverick by Lady Gaga, Lift Me Up by Rihanna from Black Panther, and This Is a Life by like Stephanie Hsu and David Byrne from Everything Everywhere.
Is that David Byrne?
Yeah, from, that's his name, right? From
Talking Heads.
Yeah, that's him.
Oh, I did not realize it was him. That's funny.
Yeah, so they were all performed during the ceremony, and I'm M.M. Keeravani, who did the music for Natu Natu, and then Chandra Bose, who directed RRR, wrote the lyrics for it, and M.M. Keeravani sung in his acceptance speech. That was a fun moment.
That's crazy.
Yeah, he sung like a Carpenter's parody about winning an Oscar. It was fun.
On top of the world.
So best original score nominees were Fablemans, Everything Everywhere, Banshees, Babylon, and All Quiet. I think that Banshees, Everything Everywhere, and the Fablemans all complement their film but don't really stand out, but Babylon and All Quiet are the ones, from what I understand, that elevate the film, and it's a talking point about the film going... Yeah.
Oh, it's yes. Between those two for me, definitely.
I'm glad Babylon lost. I'm a fan of Justin Hurwitz, but I'm glad Babylon went empty-handed.
The Babylon score was so good, though. Come on. You can say that.
I don't have to.
You're right. And I won't either, because the film I was banking on won for best score for its three-note ominous trance bass.
So the Elephant Whisperers took out short documentary, which is a Netflix release, and Navalny, about Alexei Navalny.
Beat Fire of Love, the one documentary I'd seen. Ah, Fire of Love was so good. Fuck.
It was, yeah. But I think Navalny is a more of the moment kind of film. But also, I...
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
This random story about volcanoes isn't going to stand up against this one about a political prisoner under Vladimir Putin.
I'm surprised Moon Age Daydream wasn't nominated for this. Which was...
Do you reckon... No, that wouldn't apply. I was going to say, was there not enough original footage in it? But the same would go for Fire of Love then.
Yeah. I mean, documentaries don't have to have any original footage in them.
Documentaries can just be a black screen.
But yeah, it's... but I also think that's like... What is it, a documentary or is it like a concert film kind of thing? But it was very good, and it seemed to get a lot of love in the right circles, and I'm just surprised it didn't. The other one that I would have liked to see get a nomination was The Princess, which was about Princess Diana, which a subject I have little to no interest in, but that documentary blew me away and made me somewhat interested in the subject, so would have liked to see that. And also, I had a very nice chat with the director, who's a lovely guy, so... Would have liked
You've
to see him.
Bought.
See him.
He's sold out.
Yeah.
See, both you and I rub shoulders with celebrities these days for our jobs, but I'm always one person behind the person that's rubbed shoulders with them. So I don't have to form any kind of loyalty or allegiance to them.
Well, I have interacted with directly one of the winners from tonight, Jamie Lee Curtis.
And I've shared a Google Doc with the winners of Best Director.
Did you write little messages to them in it?
We weren't on it at the same time. That would have been cool, though, me being a little anonymous wombat up in the corner of their screen.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be pretty dope. Where are we up to now? Best International Feature Film. This went to... All Quiet on the Western Front, obviously.
Yay!
Yeah. I mean, it's not really fear.
It's not a point. Yeah. Yeah, it's yeah. It feels like a complicated conversation that I'm not sure quite how well to tackle.
Yeah. Best animated feature film. This was one of the big upsets of the night. So nominees.
I think maybe for you.
Turning Red, The Sea Beast, Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, which unfortunately lost to Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio.
Have you seen Pinocchio?
No, I don't think I need to know that Puss in Boots is better.
I like Puss in Boots more than Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, but Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, the best thing about it is the animation.
Right.
And I think it's in a similar way we're talking before about things winning to change the course of the future of film. Mm. I think Pinocchio winning is going to do more for that than Puss in Boots winning. It was always going to be.
Yeah, but animated feature film is such a chaotic fucking category that it's like there was an off chance that it was going to be the film that was the most popular.
Mm. You know, imagine because if they did most crowd cheer worthy moment this year, and it was just like Puss in Boots.
Puss in Boots is Panic Attack. So the two screenplay awards went to, for original, Everything Everywhere All at Once, for adapted, Women Talking, Sarah Polley. Good ones. Yeah, I think I picked Women Talking, and I think that was the Academy's like.
I think I did too.
The Academy going, ah. There you go. You can have one.
Yeah, and even Sarah Polley in her speech was like, thank you for, you know, acknowledging a movie called Woman Talking.
Yeah.
Which again is like, well, you're probably not going to get nominated again.
How dare you fucking...
I think that's a deserved win. What were the other noms quickly?
For All Quiet on the Western Front, Glass Onion, Living, and Top Gun.
I mean, I like Glass Onion more, but I never expected it to win the award.
Mm. And the original screenplay, Everything Everywhere beat up Banshees, Fablemans, Tar and Triangle.
What do you think of this? Because I don't necessarily... This is maybe the one Everything Everywhere award that I maybe didn't want it to get, maybe. I think maybe Banshees deserved it more than...
Yeah, I mean, Banshees is pretty much like, well... I'm simplifying, but it's like Banshees is just a good script, you know?
Yeah.
That it's like you could give anyone the Banshees of Inisherin and they would probably make a good film out of it. Mm. Whereas like Everything Everywhere is so much... Oh, well, actually, maybe not then. But like Everything Everywhere is like... There's so much at play about why that film's good.
Do you reckon that makes it a good script if only the people who wrote it can direct it?
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that, like, I'm saying, yeah, maybe, you know, Banshees is the more deserving winner. But at the same time, that it's like, well, you know, if it's the best film, it's the best one.
At some point in the night, it was just like, give everything to everything, everywhere.
How did you do that?
By accident.
I think I skipped over the shorts. Well, they're not on this list.
I don't think I'd seen any of them, so I don't know if I have anything to say about the shorts.
An Irish Goodbye, The Boy, The Mole, the Fox and the Horse. I'm so that, An Ostrich Told Me the World is Fake, and I Think I Believe It is like Lachlan Pendragon, who's a Australian student animator and just like fucking made this thing as a research project.
That's cool. I should check them out. One of these years, I'm gonna.
Yeah, so quite often they do, at smaller cinemas, they'll do, oh, we're playing all the animated shorts or something, and so we could have gone along to one of those. So we're now up to the awards people care about. So you've got supporting actor, supporting actress, but we went to Kihei Kwan and Jamie Lee Curtis for Everything Everywhere All at Once, and you know what? Good on them.
Kihei Kwan, it's like if he didn't win, there would be so much uproar and so much like bad faith that I think he was always going to win, and he deserved it, and I think it's a cool comeback story, and
that's
the
beautiful.
Oscars love their stories, you know. Who was in contention for these awards?
So supporting actor, you had Brendan Gleeson and Barry Keoghan for Banshees, Brian Tyree Henry for Causeway, and Judd Hirsch for The Fablemans.
I think Kihei Kwan's definitely the best.
Well, also because he's the one that's like, he's the lead actor of that film.
Hmm.
It's a supporting right. character, but he's the lead actor, like as for the, as far as the male characters go. And I mean, you could maybe have put him in best actor. I mean, not necessarily saying he would have won over Brendan Fraser, but the fact that he was in a less stacked category, I think, has allowed him to sort of steamroll award season. But he could have been a best actor, and then like James Hong could have been a supporting actor.
Yeah, I think so. I think that would be cool.
Yeah, and then they could have won all four. That would have been insane.
Would he have? I don't think he'd have beaten Brendan Fraser straight up. I don't think he would.
Yeah,
have.
Yeah.
Jamie Lee Curtis, who did she win against?
Angela Bassett, who did not do The Thing. Hong Chow. As Ariana DeBose would say, Kerry Condon and Stephanie Sher.
Yeah, I guess.
Do you know what Jamie Lee Curtis's character's name is from Everything Everywhere?
Deirdre.
Yeah, Deirdre Babeirdre.
I picked Kerry Condon, but to be honest, I didn't really have a inkling for this one, so I was quite surprised. But also, I don't know who I would have given it to.
I picked Jamie Lee.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think it was like one of those things that, like, if you had asked me, I would have said Angela Bassett. If you'd asked me to put money on it, I would have put it on Jamie Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was like I did have a look at the odds of these things, and it was like most of these were paying out. So like Kiha Kwan was paying out like $1.02 for every dollar bet. So it was like, you know, a sure thing. Then Michelle Yeoh was like maybe 1.2, 1.3. Brendan Fraser was around the same. But then Jamie Lee Curtis and Angela Bassett were both like, I think Angela Bassett was 2.4 and Jamie Lee Curtis was 2.45. So she was technically in the second most likely. But right. that one was a lot more like this could go either way. The other three were like, yeah, it'll probably be this one.
Mm, nice.
Yeah. The
what else we got?
Best actor and actress went to Brendan Fraser for The Whale, beating out Austin Butler, Colin Farrell, Paul Mescal, and Bill Nighy.
God, Paul Mescal, man.
He's so going to have other chances.
Fucking good in that movie. Yeah, that's
true. He's all right,
isn't it? Hopefully he'll get scooped up for a role in the Batman Part 2 and be the Marvelification of Paul Mescal.
Mm. I mean, the Batman Part 2 will be a DC film, presumably.
Yeah, that's true. But I meant Marvel in the same way, like...
As in, you'll marvel at his performance.
Yes. No, I mean, like, how every soda is a Coke in Atlanta.
Right, okay.
every blockbuster is a Marvel.
Yeah. And then, yeah, Michelle Yeoh beat out Ana de Armas, Cate Blanchett, Andrea Riseborough, and Michelle Williams.
So her biggest competition would have been Cate Blanchett, right?
Yeah, that was... Yeah, it was a toss-up between the two. I think probably always going to go to Michelle, but there was that outside chance that Kate could get it. Right at the start of the awards season.
Kate could get it.
Yeah, she could. So at the start, another person I've interacted with directly, but at the start of
awards... And another person I've interacted with indirectly.
at the start of awards season, she sort of said like, yeah, we don't give a shit about awards. Like, I don't give a fuck about awards. And it was like, well, okay, then you don't get one.
Nice. So what's that leave? It's just best...
Director best and best director. Picture. So we are now down to our final two awards. Best director went to Daniel Kwan and Daniel Scheinert for Everything Everywhere, beating out Martin McDonagh for Banshee, Steven Spielberg for Fablemans, Todd Field for Tar, and Ruben Östlund for Triangle of Sadness.
And you know what? For all my complicated feelings toward Everything Everywhere, towards EOW, I think directing is the one thing I can stand by and be like,
it's got the clearest vision.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I'm glad they won, and they seem like pretty cool guys, and I feel like one day I might meet them. So I want to be able to say that I supported their win.
If we meet them together, I'll be like, actually AJ didn't even like Everything Everywhere.
It's funny thing, AJ she did it, and I'll be like, shut up, Richard.
We meet Guillermo del Toro, and you're like, Richard thinks Puss in Boots should have won.
And I think there's issues of consent in Shape of Water that bug me to this day.
Yeah. I went, AJ, no. And then, yeah, of course, Everything Everywhere All at Once took out the top award of the night.
Which by this point, it was like,
If it doesn't win.
It would have been shocking if it didn't.
It, like, if it hadn't won, I was thinking about this, that if it hadn't won, I bet they would have had to take another look at how they do their voting.
Right, yeah.
That it's like, this is clearly the film that should have won. Narratively, this is what should have won. And if our voting system allowed Banshees or The Fablemans or even Top Gun to take out Best Picture and nary another award, then it's like, yeah, we need to take a look at this. But yeah, this is one of the examples of the system working or just a film just being that good. Everything Everywhere All at Once is the most awarded film in the history of cinema.
There you go.
Not at the Oscars.
I saw a tweet that was like, a lot of awards were invented over the course of the history of cinema.
So it was IGN that announced this, and they did a breakdown of it that it's like, because you go on the Wikipedia page and it tells you, you know, it's won this many awards and received this many nominations. And it's like, you look at Everything Everywhere All at Once. In fact, I'm actually just going to pull it up. And
the whole film.
Yeah. So it says it's had 264 wins from 404 nominations. And then they're like, okay, well, you know, that's including it won like IGN Film of the Year or whatever, and it's like, okay, well, let's get rid of all the ones that you would kind of consider like not legitimate awards, and then you have that, and then it's like, oh well, because Lord of the Rings Return of the King with 101 nominations was the current record holder, and it's like, well, okay, there's been a lot of new things in the last 20 years, and they go, okay, well, let's just look at things at organizations that gave a nomination to Return of the King. Now let's look at did they give a nomination to Everything Everywhere? And it's like, even only using the ones that Return of the King received a nomination at, Everything Everywhere has over 50 more wins.
All right. And when
if you're looking for a reason for that, it's that, you know, every Lord of the Rings would have swept technical awards, just like, I mean, the production, the scale, the directing, the picture, it's like it would have won all of those. Everything has that plus three actors. To four actors that are in the conversation and everything.
And speaking of those actors, you know, when it won Best Picture, all these familiar faces that I've been seeing over the past 18 months, you know, to do with this film, they all flocked to the stage, only for some guy I've never seen to do the majority of the talking, which is such a funny quirk of Best Picture that, like,
it goes to the producer.
Yeah, it goes to the producer, and the producer's often behind the scenes. And so, like, usually, you know, you're seeing, for every other award, you're seeing this familiar face do it, and now it's like, I want to hear the Daniels talk.
Yeah, they got their time to talk.
That's true. Well, is that all we needed to talk about? I think everyone seems pretty chuffed with the
results.
I think this is probably
the best. I mean, it's easy to be like, this is the best set of results we've seen in years or ever. But it's like, the year Parasite one was pretty good results.
That's true.
So yeah.
Well, thank you for listening, everyone. I hope you enjoyed our thoughts on the thoughts of the Academy, essentially. The collected thoughts on the Academy. And we'd love to know your thoughts on our thoughts. And you can tell us them, your thoughts on our thoughts, by jumping in our Discord server, which there will be a link to in the show notes. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at ColePopshire, or you can email us at ColePopshireMedia@gmail.com. Or you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/ColePopshire, where you get to do all sorts of things, like tell us which movies to watch, and you also get to contribute to the episode itself, as well as after this music finishes, Richard, we're going to do something called a post-credit scene, which is also involving the Patreon. So let's hop to that.
Yeah, and so I will say that the Cult Elders episode, the next Cult Elders episode that comes out, you'll have an opportunity to... We'll be talking about the Oscars on that episode as well, not just the Film Fantros Fortnite's episodes.
Exactly. Woo!
Woo, yeah. Congrats to the film.
Yeah, I thought you were about to read out every winner on the Wikipedia table for it. Welcome along to the post-credit scene. This is a segment at the end of each episode where if you donate $5 or more over at patreon.com/codpops, you get to give us something to talk about, and this is the post-credit scene. And today we're joined by not only Richard, but also Spyro.
That's right.
Yes! You know how I remember that one, Spyro?
Why?
Because of the white face that he's got. It goes down onto his chest as like the dragon plates that Spyro has.
What I was thinking that you would get it from, and this is why we did it, is that he has a purple collar.
Oh, that's also very
and Crash
good.
Has...
I guess Crash Bandicoot also has a
another
colour for his beak area.
But yeah, Crash beak? Has an orange collar. So
he's it's a good that boy, simple, isn't he? Everyone. Richard, who is the post-credit scene from this week and what is it?
So today's one comes to us from Christopher Brown, who says, what fictional film product would you most like to see in the real world? Spyro? Spike? Yeah, he wants to see some cat treats or something.
Well, those are those aren't fictional.
Oh my God,
those are real.
Spyro, we can go get some.
I feel like my aunt, and this may have been a post-credit scene request before, but I feel like a lot of foods I'd be interested to taste. I think actually here's my answer. My answer is the portable flux capacitor in Back to the Future the animated series. I want that. It's a little thing you hold, and if you go 88 miles per hour it'll work. And we've talked about this before on both the podcast we did and the video I made about this series, but probably the most compelling moment of that whole animated series is when one of the characters has to go off Niagara Falls in a barrel trusting that they will hit 88 miles per hour with the portable flux capacitor before they hit the rocks below. So you know, so they either time travel or they die. But then when they do time travel, they just fall into another pond.
Yeah.
So, but they're still going at the same speed.
Hmm.
Anyway, what's your answer?
My answer. There's a few. I mean, the one that I've said.
What
this...
is that fucking butt plug from everything? I
guess my first thought is the Oasis from Ready Player One, but I know that I would become addicted to it. And other ones, the cheeseburger from The Menu.
I think that's not, I don't think that's fictional either. What, what do you want that specific
I want that.
Cheeseburger?
No, there were any sort of form of time machine, or actually, especially a time stopping device.
From
Do you know the thing that I. Get holes in my shorts, this boy.
Is that what that movie's called? Clock Stoppers?
I think so, yeah. The it's, I mean, I guess it technically does appear in some films, but the thing I fantasize the most about having is a hyperbolic time chamber from Dragon Ball Z.
Okay.
But that, you could only use that twice, so that's, it would have to, I would have to be able to change the rules of it.
I reckon you should go with the time machine from the 2002 sci-fi adventure film Clock Stoppers, directed by Jonathan Frakes. What? 29% on Rotten Tomatoes. I did not know it was Jonathan Frakes till I read the word Frakes.
You're like, Jonathan, well, this could be anybody. Frakes?
This could be anyone.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.